Thank you for joining us today on Geezers of Gear, episode number 196. Today's podcast is brought to you by Elation Professional. Elation offers its Stadium Trio for large-scale arena and stadium projects that require only the most brilliant luminaires. The Proteus Brutus, an LED wash FX light with up to 75,000 lumens of cutting power. The Proteus Excalibur, the brightest IP65 full-featured beam fixture on the market. And the Proteus Maximus, a 50,000 lumen LED profile luminaire with a complete effects system. They all come equipped with Elation's proven IP65 Proteus protection, the Brutus, Excalibur, and Maximus, a powerhouse trio of compatible luminaires for maximum impact indoors or out. Check them all out at www.elationlighting.com. And of course, please visit coffeecult.com, kcoffeekcult.com, and search for Geezer's Grind. Everyone's digging this coffee. It's good, good coffee. So it's not just junky coffee that we're going to send some profit away to a charity. It's actually really good coffee that you're drinking anyways. So you might as well get this one, coffeecult.com. And remember, proceeds on purchases of this Geezer's Grind from coffeecult.com go directly to Roby Backstage, and completely all of it goes to support folks in our industry with medical or other challenges. So please visit coffeecult.com. So hello there, and again, thank you for joining us today on Geezers, episode number 196. Coming up on 200 here soon. Who knew? So talking to a lot of folks who are heading out to Germany, to Frankfurt next week for the ProLight show. I've talked about this, I think, on previous episodes. Great show, love it, a lot of fun, great city, good food. Lots of beer. It's fun show to go to. So if you're hearing this before the show, I'm recording it right now on April 21st. The show is next week. GearSource has one of our people going to the show next week. It's Sarah, who is our EMEA business development rep over in Europe. And so Sarah will be at the show next week. If you have any desire or need to meet with Sarah, if you know Sarah, you know she's amazing. If you don't know her, I'm telling you she's amazing and you're going to want to meet with her. So to connect with her, just shoot her an email, Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at gearsource.com. And I'm sure she'll find time to meet up and grab a beer or whatever it is, a water, a coffee, whatever, a wiener schnitzel. But yeah, chase down Sarah at the show next week. You'll probably enjoy spending a little bit of time with her, and we appreciate it, of course. Speaking of GearSource, it's spring touring season, and we are busy, but I will tell you, we've got some better listings these days than we've had probably for the last, I don't know, 24 months, maybe 36 months. Lots of line array stuff. We're about to add a pretty big listing for a whole huge number of LA racks, L acoustic amp racks. And those things are rare, like extremely rare. They're hard to come by. They're hard to come by on new ones. They're hard to come by on used ones. They sell out instantly as soon as we get them. They'll fly out the door. The price is pretty good. So watch for those. Those should be hitting the site. They were supposed to be in yesterday. Maybe today, hopefully by Monday, I don't know. But any moment now, those will be hitting the site. There's a rather large number of those racks, and they're going to fly out the door. So jump on that. So this gentleman that we're recording with today is hot on the tail of winning a Parnelli Award this year. And of course, did that incredible Super Bowl halftime show. And so obviously I'm speaking about Eric Eastland, who is the president of All Access Staging and an all-round super nice guy. And so I'm really, really excited about bringing Eric on today. So let's go ahead and get him on. Well, hello there, Mr. Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fan-flippin-tastic. You know, I was just saying to you off the air here that you look good, man.
Ah, thank you.
Damn good. You look younger than me and you're a little bit older than me. So I think I got to step it up.
Out and look better. I want to get on my bicycles.
Yeah. You do a lot of biking, right?
I do.
Like a lot.
Yeah. My biggest achievement cycling was 2 years in a row. I did Seattle to Portland. It's called the STP, but it's 200 miles. And the first year I did 165 the first day and then finished up the next. Holy. But the next year I did the whole thing. And by the time you ride to the race and ride home, it was 211 miles in one day. And it was 15 and a half hours on the seat. It's a great feeling and there's a lot of adrenaline going, but I'll tell you what, that last like 50 miles is like you're dragging 15 dead animals behind you.
And that's one of those like no weight road bikes, right? With the carbon wheels and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like pretty a $20,000 frame.
I hope you have that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing is, like, I don't know if you know a guy named Peter Moore.
Morse or Moore?
Moore.
I'm not sure.
He works for Roby now. He worked for Martin for a long time. But he's a big road biker down here in Florida. And he brought his bike to my house one time and he goes, here, try it. Honestly, like I felt like that seat was going to need to be surgically removed from my ass.
Yeah,
like
you got to get used to it.
How do you sit on that thing for 200 miles?
That's before you do that event. They tell you, you know, you have to get at least 100 miles under your belt just so your body is ready for this.
Yeah.
Part of it is just building callus right there.
Yeah.
And even when you do that, you're walking funny for the next week.
It's unreal. I mean, why does that seat have to be like that? Is it just weight?
No, it's a matter of, you know, leg movement instead of this. But
I want one of those cushy seats with the springs under it, you know, one of the big fat ones that like old ladies drive on those three wheel bikes. Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah. I've been riding bikes since I was a little kid and I got serious, really serious about it when we moved to Bend, Oregon. That's where we live now.
Nice.
Back in 2004. And I know a lot of pros and I put on an event up there. So I just got to get with people that were pulling me up to the next level.
Yeah.
And I've never been super fast. I'm more of a diesel. I just keep going. And and since then, I just kind of got burned out. And then somebody introduced me to like e-mountain bikes and e-road bikes e-gravel bikes. And they have the wrong impression of them. You feel like you got a V8 under you and it's not. You can buy a bike that barely has any motor power and it's all has to be triggered by your pedal.
Yeah,
and
so pedal assist.
It's a little helper. But it puts a whole new reinvigorates
so
you to get
I don't know if you've ever heard of a town called Canmore, Alberta, Canada, right next to Banff, Canada.
I haven't, but Banff's supposed to be amazing.
It is, yeah. So I have a house in Canmore and I go there for the summers. I'm leaving in about 4 weeks. And so there's all kinds of, there's like where the 1988 Calgary Olympics were, all of the biathlon, triathlon, cross-country skiing events were like right down, a mile from my house, basically. And so there's biking trails that are insane. And I'm not in the greatest biking shape, but I go mountain biking and, you know, I get my ass kicked by the guys who live there that are my buddies.
Go out and get a specialized Levo Turbo Comp. You're going to love life.
Yeah.
You'll never get off it.
What they do, most of these guys, they're either on, I think it's called a Rocky Mountain e-bike, or there's another brand that they're all doing. And they're like, hey, look at me. You know, I'm a guy who has been mountain biking since I was a little kid in the Canadian Rockies. You know, I'm no weakling. But what this allows me to do is like, let's say I used to do a ride in 3 hours. That's a big part of my day if I'm doing it every single day, right? I can do that same ride now in 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still putting in every bit as much effort, still burning the same amount of calories, still working hard. It's just I'm going a lot faster.
it's just a little different. And yeah. People that don't do it, the what do we call them? The I'm going to say elite, but that's not the word that we use for them. But they're kind of snobby about it, and like, you're just lazy. Like,
oh yeah,
you're just you. I don't care what you do. I'm having a ball. And I've introduced it to a few people that are friends of mine that were hesitant, and now it's like you can't put a smile off their face. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have e-bikes. I have like leisure e-bikes in Canada that me and my girlfriend, we ride down the mountain into the town.
They're so fun.
Have
huh?
a beer or a coffee and ride back up to the house. Fun per dollar is the best money I've ever spent in my life. It's so awesome. Like, I pedal most of the time, but sometimes you're holding a beer in your hand and you need to use the throttle, you know? But no, I'm kidding. I don't drink beer while I'm riding. But no, I mean, it's great. And I love it. I wish I was a little bit better at doing what you do, but I just, that requires more commitment.
As long as you're having fun.
Yeah. So, you know, you obviously have a very long and very incredible career, and much of it obviously with the one company that we're all very aware of, All Access. And I want to talk about that for a bit, but you, from what I understand, you grew up in Connecticut. You were a kid born, raised in Connecticut, and that's kind of where you got the bug to get into this crazy business.
Yep.
Correct? How did that happen?
Well, I was a drummer, and not a super technical drummer, more of a Charlie Watts type. And people that I knew and roommates, bass players, guitarists, they were a lot more technical. So when we would play, it was just kind of like you kind of had the feeling like I'm holding you guys back. You want, Stuart Copeland. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I just kind of was like, maybe you get another drummer and I'll just hang out with you guys and set your stuff up. And this is right out of high school. And it kind of just started there. And then I went like, all right, well, I'll work with this band. It's $20 a night and you work your brains out. But you're working at bars and you're meeting girls and getting free beer.
When you say work, doing what? Bad. Like a roadie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I drove the van. I would pretty much set the whole thing up by myself, drums, amps, lights, sound, Jesus. Everything. I had it in a way where did it all in,
One man crew.
Yeah, but it was fine. And I think that it was one band led to another band. Every band got a little bit bigger. And I think I was about 19, 18 or 19, and I was with Edgar Winter.
Whoa.
And, had done a Europe tour with them and an American tour with them. And I was in Maryland and we were doing a show and the promoter had hired this lighting company, Show Lights. And so it was like the best lighting company that I had ever seen.
Yeah.
'Cause that's early days, you know? And this was Eric coming over after Supertramp. So all his equipment was new and nice and streamlined, modular, beautiful stuff. And I met these two Newcastle guys, twins, Peter and Gordon Barden. And they said, hey, man, you gotta quit this band and come with us. We get along great. And I did it. So I moved down to Baltimore. Show Lights had a office at Maryland Sound. Oh. And it was in a barn. It was literally where the cotton used to be stored.
Wow.
In a little town called Dickeyville. And Show Lights didn't have much gear over there. So we were putting stuff together with whatever we could get our hands on. And I just started doing a little tour here, a little tour there, Beach Boys. Peebo Bryson was one of them. Who else? Cool and the Gang, I went out with for a few months. That was one of my favorite tours ever. Great, great fun band.
Yeah.
And we just kept going doing that. And I did a show with Al Jarreau, a one-off, but those English guys were back again. So they're like, hey, we're going to get you on the crew. So I got on the crew and I was the third lighting guy. And it wasn't really my cup of tea. I was more of a classic rock kind of guy, but this is jazz. And I like this is great and very kind of high profile shows, you know.
Yeah.
And Al was a great guy. So I just worked with him more and more and more. And then every year I'd step up a little bit. And then at one point I got to be the stage manager, LD, and production manager.
Wow.
Which was great back then. You would have a lot of bands that would do that because they're more than happy to pay you double, but they don't have all the other expenses twice.
Right. Yeah.
So it was really beneficial to all. But backing up, when I was at the shop at Maryland Sound, I was there with Andy Collins, who was the director of that facility. And he just had me working like a little guy on his knees down there, building light bars and doing whatever. And this guy shows up from Los Angeles, who's English, but he's now living in California, to build some dimmers. And the Alderham dimmers, 72-way, which to this day are my favorite dimmer. They're analog, but they were the best.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who was doing lights back in the early 80s, late 70s, would all agree that the Alderham rack was amazing. Pin patch, you know, all analog. But there was this guy there, and I could tell, you know, him and Andy weren't like super bros. But it was Clive, who is now my business partner. But that's when we met, and we just hit it off and had a ball together. And then I was still out with Al, and that went on for 7 years. But I would use show lights, so it all stayed in the family.
Right.
And
what was Clive doing then?
He was basically the director of show lights at that point.
Okay.
And Eric had already starting other facets of his group. And he ended up having like five different divisions. And so Clive was lighting. And then in 86, I wanted to get off the road because I was getting married. So I went back to show lights, and I was working with Ed Wannabo. He was the sales guy at show lights, and he taught me how to do sales over there. And he was very loyal to Eric Pierce forever, till Eric passed away.
Yeah.
It's a great guy. Everyone loves him. We all know how happy he is.
Of course.
Yeah. And anyway,
damn good golfer.
Yeah. I golfed with him when he got his first hole in one. It was awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Probably still the same, still the only hole in one, but it was awesome. But I went back to work there, and I was having a good time in there. I got married, and in this time, Eric was forming a staging company, and I was like, hey, that looks like fun. So I ended up being the director of the show staging division of the show group of companies. And then he was then building custom sets and merging the stock staging and the custom stuff together. We did sets for Van Halen, David Lee Roth, Guns N' Roses. We did this set when the riot happened in Cincinnati.
Oh.
And it was good. I mean, certainly Tate was always the one to measure from, but it did okay. But that went on and on and on until Eric was just kind of like not paying enough attention to business. But Clive was, I was, and other people that were in high places. But show lights at that point was kind of dying. And Clive and I have families, married, and like, what are we going to do? So
was Eric the same way back then that he was recently, like the Rolls Royces? And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you were an LD for a band that he was doing lights for, you got a car.
Really?
He was such an interesting guy. You know, he could be very frustrating, but at the same time, I always loved the guy. He was a great guy. And I know how clever he was. And I know what a nice guy he is. When we were at his memorial service, it was funny because you had all the people that came in to see the memorial be there from way back.
Yeah.
My light went out. Sorry.
Motion. Yeah, it's all good. I can see you.
Okay. And then you had all the SGPS new people.
Yeah.
New. They're probably 10-year vets there.
Yep.
But they would get up and tell stories about Eric being such an angel and wonderful guy. And I've never met a nicer man. And he's so gentle and kind. And all us old people are like, wait a minute. Who's that guy?
Yeah, right.
That guy would scream and yell at everybody back in the day and fling it in the truck. And, you know, what'd he say? Put a gusset on it.
Yeah.
And anyway, that was a lot of fun. But that's when Clive and I said, hey, look, what are we going to do? And we said, well, you know, most of these clients are ours. Not like we want to steal his clients, but they need, if we don't take them, someone else is.
Yeah.
So we started all access, and we didn't want to have any equipment. We had a 40,000 square foot building that we decked out to be studios for music videos. Cause this is back in 91. So there's a lot of videos going on.
Right. And
so we did a few in here. We did the first Foo Fighters. We did Crosby, Stills, Nash. The funny thing is, one of our sales guys, some way, somehow, got a call from the Playboy Channel. So we shot some Playboy movies in here.
No way. So
no work got done that day of our crew.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. But anyway, one thing led to another, and we needed a deck. Well, we'll go out and have a company build it for us. Well, where's the deck? I don't know. They're not done with it. Well, I need it. So anyway, you need more control. Well, to build a deck, you got to have something to hold it up, and on and on and on and on. And
next thing you know, you're a staging company.
6,000 decks later. Yeah. And we've grown here in this compound from 40,000 to 120,000 square feet. Plus we have the London office and we have the Jersey office. And, you know, we're kind of in the same mode. A lot of our industry brothers are, where we've got a lot of new people coming in.
Yeah.
Change of the guard. Things are going really well. We did our 13th year of Super Bowl this year, and knock wood.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like that, how does, you know, it's probably not a no bid situation or anything, is it?
It is kind of, because it's such a unique style. And I didn't do it for 3 years or so that Bruce Rogers started being the production designer for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing all of his sets since he started Tribe Design. But he goes, come on, you got to do this. I go, no, you need these special tires. You need this special, that it's all special, special. And I go, Bruce, it's just not viable for one, do all this, buy all this, spend all this money for one show a year. Just stay with Brian Sullivan, with B&R Scenery. Everything's going to be fabulous. Okay, fine. And about 3 years went along, and they had an unfortunate situation in Miami with the Who, where one of the carts out of like 30 carts that had the drums and backline on it, the volunteers there ran it into a ditch. And
oof.
If you have somewhat of a catastrophic accident out there, even though I don't think anybody got hurt, but I'm not sure, NFL is just like, you got to go.
It's over.
We at that point, Brian was winding down and wanted to retire, or at least sell his company, B&R Scenery. So we ended up buying the company, and we had all the gear now. So it's like, okay, Bruce, we'll do it. So we came in with some fresh ideas that everybody really liked. They're just the style of how we're going to handle the construction with as much rental as possible, and, you know, just do as much custom as you need to.
Yeah.
But things like carts butting up to carts times 30, having them not be a trip hazard. We came up with this really cool big tongue and groove. And back 13 years ago, people were like, this is amazing. So we did a decent job getting in there, and it's evolved every year, and it gets much more technical every year. You see it from this year.
Yeah. It seemed like before, it used to be like, you used to use the same carts every year, and it just kind of, you know, the light show changed and the show changed and the performers changed, but the stage was pretty similar most times. Now, like this year, it just went nuts. Like, I read, I was reading some of the stats. I made notes on some of them. So it was the widest stage ever used for a halftime show at 235 feet.
Yep.
236 specially designed wheels on stage carts. Mm-hmm. 64 sets of hinging stairs, which I read weigh 300 pounds each.
Yeah.
Just the stairs. 16 to 20 people on each cart, 500 total, just to get lighting and staging on and off the field.
Yeah.
And one of the craziest ones, and maybe you can tell the story, was the paint for that stage this year.
Oh, yeah. We had been getting some renderings from Willow, who was the designer.
Yeah.
And Bruce pretty much controls the whole situation, but the artist has a designer that says, hey, here's what we want to do. And then Bruce gets in and goes, okay, we can do that. Move on. And then he had the whole idea of flying everybody. All right, so Bruce is going to go talk to Tate. We don't fly people, so we had minimal involvement with that. We did some scenic work to those flying beds, but nothing else. And had an incredible system out there.
It was
so
pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was, if you were to talk to them about it and they explained it, I never got to see the whole brains of the operation. I was running around doing other things, but apparently it was very old school, almost like, you know, 100-year-old technology with the drums, but then slap computer control onto it and manual brakes. There was all sorts of manual backup for it. So they did a great job and it was very cool looking. But as we're working on the set, it wants to be all red. Oh, okay. Red. Well, then it started to get a little bit more difficult because we finally got the real reference of what it wants to be. And it was more like ultraviolet red,
Very
kind of orangey and pink. And we're like, all right, well, we'll just go up to Hollywood and hit the paint store and have them mix us up a batch. And they just couldn't hit the color. They couldn't get that vibrance. We ended up going to
Wildfire.
Wildfire. $235 per gallon.
Oh.
We spent like over $20,000 on paint.
Wow.
I mean, a lot more. And we had to repaint on site part of it. Just they want to had a fresh look for the performance. But Yeah, it was a big deal. That paint was not that fun to use.
When I read something too about a pallet that got lost and so you were loading trucks with wet paint and
It wasn't that bad, but it was down to the wire. Like we were loading in a day. So FedEx had a pallet full of it and there was nowhere to get any more. So we found it in a day or so and reeled it in. Super Bowl always has some glitch for us somewhere, whether it's something that happens to our machines. I mean, I don't know how we got through COVID with putting the weekend together in Tampa.
Yeah,
that was a nightmare.
Well, if it wasn't in Florida, you wouldn't have, you know?
Yeah, right.
Here in Florida, we didn't give too much care towards COVID. It was like, what? COVID, what?
Yeah. Let's not get on Florida now.
Yeah. Well, I live here. I've lived here.
My sister lives there. She's in Port St. Lucie.
Ah, yeah. I'm not far from there. I'm in Wellington, West Palm Beach, basically.
Yeah. I like it down there. I like going to Boca Raton. I have a good time.
Yeah, no, it's nice. I also read somewhere that you do the UFC, you did the UFC ring.
We've done about five of them so far, and they're scattered all over the world at this point. And I want to say, I think I heard back when we started doing a few years back that there's going to be a total of 20, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a unique item to put together. It's similar. Its uniqueness is similar to WWE because we also do them.
Right.
Where that ring has to have some give and bounce.
Right, yeah.
You know, like a dancer likes a sprung dance floor.
Right.
These wrestlers are going to jump from a post in the corner, you know, 15 feet in the air and land.
Yeah.
So there's a fine line of how much structural you can put in and what you shouldn't. And
So you just build it and give it to them, and then they travel around with it and set it up and stuff, and then
which is common in the rock and roll industry too. There's going to be plenty of production managers that have their own team,
right?
We build it and set it out. Yeah,
yeah. I guess you know it's funny because I never thought of anyone building those. I'm a big fan of UFC. I watch it all the time, but I never really thought about it. And then I read somewhere in a note that all of the rings were being built by All Access. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, I don't know why it surprised me so much that it'd be somebody in our industry.
Generational.
Yeah.
It's generational where whoever started them.
Yeah.
It needed to get to be more technical. These people had their limitations. I don't even know who it was. They didn't do a bad job, but the modern world shows up and they want modern technology, lightweight. And we were fortunate enough to be there. Now we have kind of made a name for ourselves in the sports world and across the board. At one point, we were doing Super Bowl. Right after Super Bowl, we do the NBA All-Star Game. Right after that, we would do the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Right after that, we would do the MLS All-Star Game and Championship.
Jesus.
And while we're doing all of this, we're doing Supercross, which we do everything for Supercross, design, manufacture, everything, and also outdoor motocross. We had a race team for Supermoto, where we have a AMA number one plate from 2005. That's what this is behind me.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. If you ever get into cars, let me know. I have a racing driver son. He's racing in England right now. So
no, I was smart enough to say with a, you know, two wheels and we did it and I know when to stop. Yeah. I had bicycle race teams and you just got to have your fun with it and then stop. Don't
it gets expensive.
It is very expensive, but I mean, since then we have now Red Bull as a client because we were doing a lot of Red Bull race.
Very cool. Yeah.
That's, I don't know, almost 20 years with them. We also do everything for Monster. We don't really do much for Red Bull anymore. It's kind of like sleeping with the enemy, you know. So we've been with Monster for over 10 years, and they're a lot of fun. I like working with everybody.
Yeah.
But it's all kind of cross-pollinates everywhere. So we have a heavy hand in the sports world.
Yeah. That's very cool. Let me ask you a question. You know, are you ever surprised by how big the staging side and scenery set side of the industry, like how big Tate has become, how big you guys have become? Does it ever surprise you that it's grown to this level?
I don't know that it surprises me because it's kind of like you visit your daughter and son-in-law and they have a fresh baby. Well, they live in England, so you don't see the kid till 5 years, 10 years later. And you're like, wow. Well, if you lived there and saw the kid every day, you wouldn't have any big impact. So it's kind of like that to me.
Right.
And everything just grow on a nice trajectory. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, Tate is so big.
Yeah.
It's not really what I aspire to be.
Yeah.
We want to be more working on, I don't want to say mom and pop. We're certainly not that, but
do you,
I just don't want to get that big. That's
do you and Clive have family successors?
We have our kids that are in the industry, Graham and, Jillian. Clive's two kids both work here.
Okay.
My son, Zach, is out on Dave Matthews right now.
Okay.
Working for us. He's a rigger, automation operator. He does a lot of everything. And when he's on his off time, he works at the amphitheater up in Bend, Oregon, and they're the local theater there. So he's not going to be working here in the facility. He just works around it. So,
no, I ask because like you say, you know, you don't aspire to be that big or anything, but the general exit strategy for most people in our industry, not dissimilar to Tate, is, you know, large private equity group or, some financial institution of some sort. It's not even typically these days, it's not even really like a strategic, you know, like you may not be bought by Tate. You might be bought by a big private equity group or something. Or,
yeah, I mean, we see those every day. Yeah, we see them every day. And the offers are usually ridiculous. And these days, we don't goof around with them. It's like, hey, we need this much. Don't talk to me unless you're talking that much.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
And really simple, not to be cocky. We're just not, we don't want to play the game. And, yeah. You know, everything's for sale. Always
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
We're always willing to listen to fair offers, but it's not the plan right now. By this date, we're going to sell.
No. And I'm not trying to get that kind of, I'm not trying to pry or anything. It's just, I love having those conversations, whether it's on my podcast or just in person with people over a beer, because, you know, I only have one son and my company, you know, my son doesn't work for my company. He's a professional race car driver. And, you know, he's got a very small job in my company just as a token job so that he's got health insurance. But other than that, you know, he doesn't really work in my business. So I'm always thinking about, well, geez, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know, what's that look like? And so, you know, I think at our age, everyone's got to have some sort of an idea of what their succession plan is, of course.
I think, you know, Tate sold 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, SGPS never sold. Eric held on to it forever, and they're still chugging along.
Yeah.
And then there are companies that. What's that?
Does Jennifer run it now?
Well, she runs the LA, and then Eric's wife Angela runs Las Vegas. Okay. I don't know the details over there. Yeah. I didn't think they were going to last.
Yeah.
But they seem feeling okay.
Yeah.
Good for them. You know?
I'm surprised they didn't just get bought up by somebody and exit, you know, but it's a tough time. I mean, when somebody with that much of a personality and a presence disappears, you know, Jesus, it's a terrible time.
Yeah.
Well, I know you got a birthday thing, and I promised I wouldn't take more than 30 minutes, and it's been 32. So, you know, I appreciate you jumping on. You've had quite a year. I mean, again, this Super Bowl was incredible that you just did. It was like, and I know Tate did the flying things and stuff, but the whole project was just unreal. Like, did I love the artist? Do I love the music? No, but the show was incredible. It was outrageous.
Yeah. You understand the technical.
Of course. I mean, and just the visual. I mean, it was just beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful show. But, you know, and you got a Parnelli Award too. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Very cool.
Did you hear my lengthy acceptance speech?
No, I didn't. Is it on YouTube or something? Because I wasn't there.
It could be, but Terry Lowe had requested to keep the acceptance speeches to a minimum. And I think we were the second award, and I just walked up and went, thanks, and moved on. And then I got all these emails, best acceptance speech ever.
That's awesome. That's so
some funny. People keep going on for hours.
Yeah. Well, and then I'd like to thank my cousin Lucy and my second cousin Johnny. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate you doing this, and hopefully we can do it again sometime. Maybe we'll drag Clive out of his office and get him on or something. And, you know,
good.
Great. Happy for your success and continued success and health and all that stuff and happy riding. And yeah.
Yeah, right on. Well, I really appreciate it, and hope to talk soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much.
Have a good weekend, Ant.
You too.
See you later. Sweet 16.
sweet.